You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
I had a mate come down and stay with me while the wife and kids were in Australia. We hung out for the weekend. He came to the last leg. We got home that night and I went, "You hungry?" And he went, "Yeah." And I went, "Let me see what I've got." And I think we end up having fish fingers in hot dog rolls and some chicken nuggets. And he just went, "You're a 10-year-old, right?" And I went, "Yep, absolutely."
But before all of that, welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. I hope you're all okay. I think we should open this one up playing a game of who's had the shittest week. Because I'm pretty sure I will win, and I'll tell you for why. My husband had COVID. Oh, yes. But... did he really have COVID? Well, he didn't have any symptoms, but he tested positive, which meant that he had to self-isolate in our bedroom, feeling completely fine, lying on the bed, eating Snickers, which I had to run downstairs and get for him, and drinking lots of cups of tea, which again, I had to run downstairs and get for him. You tried doing that and working full time and taking two kids from A to B to C to D to E to F to G all the way through to Z every single day, morning, noon and night. And then tell me whether you've had a rubbish week or not. Wendy.
Oh, God, I'm feeling the pressure. I thought I'd had a bit of a shit week, but I'm just going to get back in my box and be quiet because I can't beat that. I've had ballet exams. Not me personally. No one needs
I would
to
like
see
to
that.
See that, Wendy.
No. And general running around of children and bemoaning the fact that I'm the one doing it. But other than that, no, you win.
Where was Timothy? Why wasn't Timothy helping with the running around?
Oh, he was here. It's just, there's more and more clubs. Too many clubs. The older they get, the more clubs. Like, and someone's now told the big one she's good enough to do swim school. Like, as in, you know, the competitions. And I'm like, no, you're bloody not.
I know. Flo's doing that whole swim thing as well. I counted. I do 14 non-school journeys to clubs and back every week.
Okay, well, introduce the guest and I'll count mine up and we'll see if
you
win.
Let's see how many he does. Right. Welcome, Mr. Adam Hills.
Hello.
Hello. Now, first of all, I want to know, what country are you joining us from? Because I believe you're I wouldn't say bi-coastal, but it's not bi-coastal. You're bi-country, are you?
Bi-continental, perhaps?
Oh, I like that. It's sophisticated.
I'm in England at the moment.
You're with us.
I am with you. I'm in the same time zone as you, the same weather system. A 34-degree difference between London and Melbourne yesterday.
Is it true that your wife and kids are in Australia, though?
Yes. So when you were talking about the running around and the dropping off and all of that stuff, I was squirming because I'm not in Australia and able to do that. So what happened with us was that at the end of 2019, my wife and kids were living here with me in London, and my daughters got a little bit homesick and they said, we want to go back to Australia.
How old are your girls?
So they are now 8 and 11.
Okay.
So just at the point where they were missing their friends, they'd been away for a while, and we went, well, let's try. You guys moving back to Australia, me filming the last leg here for 10 weeks at a time, and then when we're not filming, I'll just go back home for a couple of months, because we live in a world where you can easily flip between England and Australia at the end of 2019.
Oh, man, I can see where this story's going.
2019.
Let's skip forward to 2020, Adam, and tell us how that worked.
So luckily, March 2020, the series of The Last Leg finished right as lockdown started here. I went back to Australia, and I was in Australia for 7 months. So
amazing.
I was able to do the homeschooling, and Melbourne went into a ridiculous lockdown at that point. They did like 100 odd days. So I was there for 7 months of 2020. It was lovely. Came back here, went into lockdown, went back to Australia for Christmas for 2 weeks of hotel quarantine, 2 weeks of time with the kids, and then back here into lockdown again. And then I got stranded here for 7 months.
Oh, man alive.
So, and the 2020 was 7 months in Australia, 2021 was 7 months here.
The reason I'm saying man alive is that means your wife had 7 months of doing all the clubs and the running around.
Yes. And the reason I paused is because a lot of that 7 months also then ended up being lockdown.
Oh, shit, she had 7 months of homeschooling. No.
Yeah.
No. Adam, how exactly are you ever going to be forgiven and dig yourself out of this hole?
Well, thankfully, the first 7 months.
Oh, it's balancing out.
It didn't balance. It did. There is no way it made up for it, but it helped. It helped ever so slightly. What helped was at the beginning of this most recent lockdown in 2021, we bought a holiday shack down the coast about an hour and a half from Melbourne opposite my mother-in-law's house. So when the lockdown hit, my wife took the kids down there, lived at my mother-in-law's house while renovating the shack, and then moved into the shack. And it got her through, I think. She loves renovating. She loves decorating. And just to be by the beach, to be able to have walks on the beach and all of that kind of stuff in lockdown.
To have your mother-in-law on hand.
Exactly. So I'm not saying I facilitated that by any means, but it kind of just got her through. So, yeah, when you were talking about the running around and the clubs and all of that kind of stuff, I felt incredibly guilty.
He's actually squirming on the screen here.
I swear, it wasn't designed to be having a pop at you.
That must have been some reunion when you finally got back. I'm picturing the scene in Love Actually where they're all in the airport and everyone's running in slow-mo through the airport.
Well, funnily enough, so the problem was when I flew back, which was, I guess it was December 20 a few months ago or a month ago, I still had to do 72 hours of home quarantine.
Ugh.
And if I did it with my wife and kids, then they all had to do 72 hours of home quarantine as well, which meant the kids would have missed their last day of school for the year. And of course, in Australia, the school year ends in December. So it was the last day of their entire school year. So thankfully, some people that lived a street down from us had gone away for the weekend. And my wife said, well, how about I take the girls down there? We'll stay at their place for 3 days and you can at least self-isolate at home on your own for 3 days. But after the first day, my eight-year-old did her last day of school and then she said, Daddy, I want to come quarantine with you.
Oh.
Because what happened was when I got home, they all came out onto the street to meet me, but we couldn't touch each other.
God, that's so hard.
So I said to my daughters, right, well, because it's going to be sad, we'll do a bum dance. So we all did a bum wiggle dance on the street.
Why not?
I went into the house to quarantine. But then, yeah, after a day, my eight-year-old said, Daddy, I want to come quarantine with you so I can cuddle you. And I said to her, well, look, that's fine, but you need to know we literally can't leave the house for 48 hours. We have to stay inside at all times. We can go out into the courtyard, but we can't go outside of the house. And she just went, oh no, Daddy, does that mean we'll have to eat takeaway and watch movies for 2 days?
She's not daft, is she?
She's not daft at all. So we've just had 5 weeks at home where we did reconnect. And it was that thing, you could see it happening gradually. Like my eight-year-old is the kind of person just jumps straight into everything. And she was the one that wanted to quarantine with me and we had two lovely days at home of literally eating takeaway and watching movies. My 11-year-old took a little longer to come round.
Interesting. Playing harder to get.
A little bit. And
or just shifts are hard. Shifts in dynamics are hard to adjust to, aren't they?
Especially in pre-teens where they don't know what the hell's going on at the best of times, bless them.
Exactly. And I've just missed, you know, when you're 11, 7 months is quite a big, a lot changes in 7 months.
Yeah,
and I missed
true.
A lot of it.
So how do you play catch up with the 11-year-old?
I try and organise. I just try and have time with her, and it doesn't have to be anything special with the 11-year-old. It just has to be hanging out, having a chat, and reconnecting. And it happens slowly. It took 2 or 3 days, and I noticed after about 2 or 3 days, she would just kind of sidle over to me and sit on my lap. Do you know what? I'll be honest. Here's what I think what really got her, and it was towards the end of the trip, and I saw that little light of connection in her head go, oh, yeah, you're all right. So for Christmas, my wife's going to kill me for this. For Christmas, I bought my daughter a 1,000-piece Friends jigsaw puzzle. Because she loves Friends. And so, but she was quite like, she wanted to do it. She didn't, she would maybe occasionally ask for help, but most of it she did on her own. And I know my wife's like that as well. Whenever we go on holidays, she has a jigsaw puzzle that she does. No one else comes near. So my daughter did it and she put it out on the coffee table in the kind of TV in the lounge room. and we'd be watching TV and she'd do a little bit. Eventually, I don't know, it took her 2 weeks and she finished this 1,000-piece Friends jigsaw puzzle and it looked amazing. It looked incredible. And my wife was like, great, now we can take it apart and I can do my jigsaw puzzle. And my daughter was like, but no, I want to leave it here. It looks so good. Can't we leave it here for the holiday? And I was kind of like, I mean, it does look really good. Like, can we not leave it there for the holiday? And my wife was like, well, leave it there for a couple of weeks, but then I want the coffee table and I want to do my jigsaw puzzle. And we're like, oh. So the night before the jigsaw puzzle had to come apart, it was pretty fraught because my wife was going, well, let's do it now. Let's do it now. I want to start my jigsaw puzzle. And my daughter was like, no, we said tomorrow. We're keeping
jigsaw
it for
puzzle war in the hills.
Yeah. Oh, I think you're going to have to buy another coffee table. I think it's the only answer.
It was really getting, I mean, bearing in mind throughout all of this, I was doing a Beatles jigsaw puzzle out in the kind of shed. Because I'm like, that was the only place I could
find
room.
Yeah, but the shed in Melbourne is a bit more hospitable than the shed in England in January, let's be honest.
That's a good point. So eventually it got to the point where I said to I managed to talk my daughter down and I went, okay, look, I think it's time to take the puzzle apart. You've had a really good run. I'll help you with it. And she was getting quite stressed. And my wife had actually started her puzzle on top of my daughter's puzzle. So, and she had done all the edges. So I took all the edges apart, each side, moved them, started, you know, pulling apart my daughter's jigsaw puzzle, put my wife's back together around the edges so that all the pieces were back there.
Greater love hath no man.
This is what got my daughter, I think. In the middle of her Friends jigsaw puzzle, it said Friends in quite big letters. And I realized if you take the F, the R, the I off the beginning and the S off the end, it just says end. And I just looked at her and went, how about we just leave that in the middle of Mummy's puzzle? we just leave all her edges and then the word end in the middle just as a joke. And my daughter kind of looked at me as if, you're going to get in so much trouble for that. And I gave her a look that went, come on, let's do it. And I think that was the moment after 4 weeks where she went, yeah, you're all right.
You became co-conspirators.
Did it worry you during, like, I imagine it was a worrying time when you were away from the kids, worrying about that connection and worrying about missing so much of, when they're little, 7 months is a really long time, isn't it? And how did you manage that?
It was weirdly a lot easier when they were in lockdown because, I mean, from a purely selfish point of view, I wasn't missing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there were no great – and, in fact, what would happen with lockdown is I'd get up, you know, 8 in the morning here. While I was having breakfast, they were having dinner. So we would kind of eat together on FaceTime.
Cute.
And then some nights it'd be like maybe 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night here. And I'd get a text from my daughter saying, Daddy, do you want to have a quick chat? I'm the first one awake.
Oh, that's lovely.
And so weirdly, that lockdown period was when we connected the best because they were at home the whole time. They had no one else to distract them. Once they came out of lockdown, then the girls were like, well, we're off playing. I'd kind of go, is anyone around for a chat? And they're like, no, we're having a sleepover. No, we've gone to Charlie's place or whatever. So, so during lockdown, I felt like we connected pretty well. We've always had me away like for certain amounts of time. So the girls are kind of used to it. They now say it feels normal. Like I'll come home after 7 months and within 3 days they're like, Daddy, this just feels like normal again. So, and I guess the other thing is for me, my dad was a Qantas cabin crew. I grew up with a dad who was Qantas cabin crew. So he was away 2 weeks for every 1 week that he was home. And it didn't occur to me that that was anything out of the ordinary. It was only when I talked to other kids or even other adults later that they said, yeah, I would have a dad that would come home at 7 o'clock every night and then I'd go to bed at 8. I only saw him for an hour. And I was like, well, my dad would be gone for 2 weeks and then one day he'd come home from school and he'd be there in a beanbag at 3 in the afternoon and he'd be home for a week. And he'd be there every day, all day. So
yeah, there's advantages to both, aren't there, I guess? It's what you're used to.
I absolutely love that way of growing up. I mean, to come home from school, hang out with dad, watch some TV, have a swim, play cricket in the backyard, you know, that would happen for a week and then maybe he'd be gone for 2 weeks.
Mm.
But when he was around, he was properly around. So I, that's what I try and do now. I try and make sure that when I'm around with the kids, I'm properly around.
Well, fascinatingly enough, all the latest data from research studies about spending time with your kids and the amount of time you need to spend with them to have good outcomes in terms of their mental health as adults shows it's actually not about the amount of time you spend with them. It's about the intensity of the time that you do spend with them. So you're getting something right, Mr. Hills.
Do you know what? I used to get annoyed at this, but I've recently started to realize it's a bit of a compliment. If my youngest in particular, if she has someone over for a play date, she will always try and incorporate me, or often try and incorporate me into what they're doing. And it'll be,
sweet,
Daddy, come and play Jails, or come and play Horsies with us, or the most recent
Jails. That's a bold one.
We have Jails. My son loves playing Jails.
What is it about Jails?
The bars. They just love those bars.
But it's me that's been put into jail.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's the same with you.
Yeah, and there's often a rope involved because we need to escape.
Right. I wonder if it's if they enjoy, firstly, the shift in power dynamic of you're the one that's normally telling them what to do and now they can order you around. I hate jails because I always get offended at the ridiculous excuse they come up with to send me to jail.
Oh, what have you been sent down for?
Oh, just anything. Sometimes there's not even an explanation. Right, you're going to jail. Why? Because I said so.
Because you exist.
What are we in the real world now? But recently my youngest has started wanting to do makeovers on me with her friends.
Oh, lovely. I bet you look beautiful when she does that.
I always. The other one recently had a friend over and decided she was going to use whiteboard markers to draw tattoos all over my body.
Oh, that's
God, playing in your house is very different to mine. I just have to be a Harry Potter character permanently. And I always get given the shit one. I'm always like the caretaker. I'm always given the caretaker. And occasionally I'm allowed to be the headless ghost. That's about as much as I get. They're 10 and 6, Adam, so same kind of ballpark, and they both love Harry Potter, so I am often seen riding a pretend broom around my downstairs.
Lovely.
The tattoos that they did recently, they kind of did my arms and then they did the other arm and then said, can we do your back? And I went, yeah, sure. And they went around and wrote old and grey on my back.
You can always rely on your kids for a confidence boost.
Well, you may be old and grey according to your children, but you have also just written a book. Am I right? So you've got something going for you somewhere. Tell us about your book. What are you up to?
Well, I think as a comedian, as a performer of any sort, you want your kids' approval. And it occurs to you one day that actually what you do for a living isn't enough. And turns out hosting a satirical Friday night comedy show about the news doesn't really interest my kids that much.
No, doesn't cut it.
I know. They're really not fussed by what Rishi Sunak has to say about the COVID help for people.
Maybe they should put him in jail. Maybe that's not their fault.
I mean, there probably is. I love the idea that somewhere there's like a prisons minister whose kids are putting them in jail and they're like, you know, I do this for a living, right? It's kind of the same thing. So I think every comedian wants to, and every performer, I've heard stories of, I had a TV show in Australia once, and we had Jarvis Cocker on from Pulp, and he was talking about how he would sing his children to sleep, and eventually they just went, no more. And he's like, you know people pay for this, right? You know I'm quite good at this.
We had Paloma Faith on, and she said the all same.
Right. That her, really?
Her
yeah, right.
Like, shush, mummy. And she's like, people pay good money to hear my voice.
So the first idea for a book came about in 2018, 2017, and my wife and I took the kids to Paris for a few days, and my youngest at that point, who was probably about 3, kept mispronouncing merci beaucoup as mousy beaucoup, and I thought, well, that is a kid's character right there, mousy beaucoup, and her travels around the world. So I started writing that, and then I was called in for a meeting with some publishers. And they said, have you got any ideas for a kid's book? And I went, well, Mousy beaucoup. And they went, oh, great. And I kind of told them all about that. And they said, what about for your older daughter? Because that's, you know, they're the real readers, the kind of like 8 to 12-year-olds. And I said, well, she said yes to me yesterday that when she grows up, she wants to be a rock star and a detective. And she can't decide which one she wants to be. I said, so maybe there's a book about a rock star detective who's 12. And they went, oh, that sounds good. Maybe go away and write a few chapters on that one. So I kind of came up with this idea about a 12-year-old rock star detective who goes viral over the internet because one of her classmates, her best mate George, films her singing, and together they put it up online, and suddenly she's a viral sensation. So she ends up doing her first ever tour, and she takes George with her because he knows how to work the social media, because kids, you know, at 12 are all over TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So these two 12-year-olds are doing their first ever tour of Europe, but everywhere they go, a priceless piece of art is stolen from a local museum. And when the police look into it, all the evidence make it look like Charlie and George are the ones doing it. So someone's framing them by the look of it, but they have to work out who it is in order to save their careers and prove their innocence.
But I'd quite like to have a read of that.
Yeah. When is this out?
It's out on the 3rd of February.
I'm going to email your publisher.
Awesome. That's the response you want. And it's a funny, I had dinner recently with a few friends, one of whom is Guy Garvey from Elbow.
Oh,
just a bit of name dropping there.
He is like my savior, that man. His voice is my saving grace. You can't just drop that into conversation.
Oh, I love Guy. He's such a lovely man. In fact, on a side note, so my wife's a singer. My wife's an opera singer. And she's got a beautiful voice. And she used to sing to my, well, she sings to my daughters to put them to bed every night. And a few years ago, my youngest said, Daddy, can you sing a song for me tonight? And I was like, I cannot match mummy. She went, go on. And so I'm an okay singer. So I sang two songs for her that became her regulars. One was a song called Nyul Nyul Girl, which is an Australian song with Aboriginal language in it. And it's written about the songwriter's daughter. It's Nyul Nyul Girl, You're the One I Love. You're from Birod Scrub, You're the Only One I Love, and it's just gorgeous. So I sang that to my daughter, and then I sang One Day Like This by Elbow. So those became our two songs. And then recently they've released a new song called What Am I Without You, which is actually about Guy's son. So now I've got two Elbow songs that I sing to my daughter. Anyway, so we were out at dinner, and I was saying I've got this book out, and Guy said, oh, what's it about? And I said, I told him the story of the Rockstar Detectives, and he went, can I read it?
Oh, yeah, that's how I'm feeling right now.
Well, do you know what? Here's how I think it might be a good book. My wife told me it was a good book when she read it. She went, this is really good. This is
high
really
praise
good.
Indeed.
Like, thank you. That's high praise. But more higher praise, and I hope she never listens to this podcast. a few days later, she really raved about it when she was drunk.
Oh, in Vino Veritas.
Exactly. Yes, yes, that's how I know. And raved about it more. She was like, that is such a good book. And I was like, wow, this might be something here.
Ladies and gents, get your other half drunk if you want to know what they really think.
Yeah.
Do you know what? We were looking around for quotes from the front, and David O'Doherty, who's also a friend and a comedian and a children's author, provided a quote. But I should have just written, this is a really good book. And then in brackets, Adam's wife while drunk.
Everyone would believe it then. Now, there's been other stuff you've been up to. You've got a bloody MBE.
Yes.
How did you get one? You're Australian. Wendy and I are English and we haven't even got one.
That's so Alex Brooker and I would play a game whenever we came back every year at the beginning of a new series of The Last Leg. And it would be, can't believe we didn't get an MBE. Can't believe we didn't get an MBE. And I would always joke and go, I don't think I'm allowed to. I'm pretty sure I'm not allowed to. So December of last year, I got a letter with On Her Majesty's Service written on the front of it.
Wow, I was going to say, how do you find out? Like, do they phone you, email you? But it's an actual letter.
It's an actual letter. And my first thought was, I think I might be the new James Bond. And so then
I'm going to jail again.
Yeah, one again. Or the other.
Yeah, my daughter has taken this next level. So I opened it up and it said, you know, the Prime Minister's putting you forward to the Queen to be recommended for an MBE. But then you have to do do you accept and just check all your details and everything.
Well, considering all the stuff you talk about on The Last Leg, it's amazing the Prime Minister put you forward for anything, quite honestly.
Well, that was the beginning of December. I didn't tell my family about it. I didn't tell my mum. I didn't tell
Why?
Because, well, for two reasons. One, part of me thought it might be a prank. like a very small part of me. It looked pretty official, but part of me thought, I mean, there's a month here where we've still got to do the last leg.
And during I could say month, anything.
During that month, we did award Boris Johnson the Dick of the Year. And I'm pretty sure we made several jokes about Prince Andrew.
I thought you were proved right.
But I just figured, I thought I'd hate to have to call my mum and go, do you know I told you I was getting an MBE? I'm really sorry. They've taken it away because I said the Prime Minister was a dick. I couldn't
well,
break
well,
her heart.
What I like really that. Want to happen now, I can see the Queen there with her sword doinking you on both shoulders and whispering in your ear, I agree, he was a dick, wasn't he?
So when do you get to meet her, Madge?
Yeah, when's it happening?
So it's said in the letter that there's been a backlog. There's a backlog because people weren't able to collect, you know, their awards and the like. So I don't know when it's going to happen. I have met her before, though. I've met her a couple of times.
Oh, check you out. Where, when, how? We're in the wrong game, Wend. We want to hang out with Adam a bit more.
No.
So I performed at the Royal Variety Performance, I think in 2009 in Blackpool, and the Queen and Prince Philip were the royal guests there. And then afterwards, when they do the walk around on stage and kind of meet everyone, that's when the Queen and the Queen. So what happened was, the producers had said, you know, what are you going to talk about? And I said, oh, I'll talk about having a prosthetic foot and blah, blah, blah. And they said, can you do a joke about Australia at Christmas time? And I said, why? And they said, because it's hot at Christmas, isn't it? And I said, well, yes. And they went, oh, that's hilarious. Do that. I was like, okay, I'm not sure what the joke is. So I opened my set by saying, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm flying back to Australia tomorrow so that I can have a real Christmas, you know, where you get Santa and a suntan. And, like, no one laughed. Nothing. So, okay, well, let's talk about my foot. So when you know, the Queen came round and shook my hand, and her first words were, the audience were very helpful, weren't they? Which I felt was her way of saying, you were a bit shit, but we got you over the line.
Ouch!
But I kind of went, yes, well, my answer was, I said, well, yes, Your Majesty, I think when one makes the effort to go to Blackpool, I think the audience appreciate the effort one has gone to. And I was like, why am I saying one? What is wrong with you?
Also, a little bit tit for tat. You took on the Queen.
I know. And
maybe she liked you for it, though, and that's why she's giving you the prize.
Or maybe.
Forget, he's going to end up in the tower. Forget anything else. My God.
But then she was going to walk away, and then she stopped and she said, did you fly here just for this show? And I said, no, Your Majesty, I've been here for a few months, but I am flying back to Australia tomorrow. And she said, ah, yes, so you can have a real Christmas.
Oh, my God. Like,
yeah. I just got burnt by the Queen.
That's amazing. Wow. I'm kind of glad she has that kind of feist in her.
Absolutely.
I always think as a performer, it must be, you know, you get offered the Royal Variety and you say yes, and you probably don't know at the time which royal you're going to get. So if you get the Queen, you've lucked out. If you get William, you're doing all right. But what if you get one of the others? You're like, oh, God, this is
they're running a bit short now.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah. I think I've technically got more titles than Prince Andrew at the moment.
Yeah, I think we all do.
I think we all do. I think my dog does.
Funnily enough, actually, I've been to a couple of Royal Garden parties. Not that I'm trying to go tit for tat with you, Adam. But at the last one, it was Andrew.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was. And but I obviously didn't know what I know now.
No,
what I
none
think
of us
I
did.
Know now.
Wow. Well, what I think I know now is that I've not been to a Royal Garden party or met the Queen, so we need to do something about this, please.
Well, I tell you what.
Yeah, you're lagging behind, Wendell.
I am.
If my wife and kids aren't here when I
will you take us, collect, please?
I'll take you. Yeah.
Hey, we'll pretend to be related to you in some way. Oh, Wendy, we can do Australian accents. Pretend
no,
we're
we
children.
Can't. No.
All right, that's it. A deal. You're coming to the palace with
deal. Now, the most ridiculous question, and it's usually aimed at people who have got their kids around, but I'll be interested to hear, what's for tea, Adam? And who's cooking?
Okay, the reason I'm laughing is because, okay, so I've been taught. I talk about my kids in stand up, and there's one joke that I came up with, which is based in truth, which is, I'm a massive kid, and which is why I love being a parent. Why I think it's good when you're a comedian, because comedians are massive children and you're just hanging out with your children the whole time. So when my daughters say to me, like if my wife's out for the night, if she's singing, if she's got a gig or whatever, if my daughters say, Daddy, can we eat fish fingers and watch Hotel Transylvania tonight? My answer will be, yeah, I was kind of going to do that anyway. So I don't know what's for tea tonight, but I'll tell you what I had for tea last night.
Go on.
Meatballs, mashed potato and coleslaw.
Oh, filthy.
But what? No, wait, we need to talk about this. Yeah. Cold and hot on the same plate?
I know, that's
coleslaw
just
with meatballs and mash. I'm confused.
It's like a 10-year-old just going, I want that, that and that. That'll do me. Perfect.
I'm going to have to try it now.
I had a mate a couple of years ago, pre-COVID, come down and stay with me while the wife and kids were in Australia. We hung out for the weekend. He came to the last leg. We got home that night and I went, we got home at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning and I went, are you hungry? And he went, yeah. And I went, let me see what I've got. And I think we end up having fish fingers in hot dog rolls and some chicken nuggets. And he just went, you're a 10-year-old, right? And I went, yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Is your whole life like a 10-year-old when you're not with your wife and kids?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. Embarrassingly so. Like but also partly because of my kids. So they've sent me, I don't know if you know the TV show Bluey. You must do. Everyone seems to at the moment.
We do.
Okay. So they've sent me a furry bandit doll. So I've got that on my bed. And I've also got a pickle from Rick and Morty on my bed. And so every now and then I have a cleaner come in and I'm sure they look at my bed and go, how old are you? So, you know, I think I'm totally just like a big kid. And my kids will say that to me and I love that. Maisie, my youngest, will just go, Daddy, you're pretty much 10, right? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Okay, well, tell them we can very much vouch for that now that we've heard what you have for your tea.
Honestly, I think I was shopping I used to live in Sweden. I lived in Sweden for a couple of years and I quite liked that meatballs is a meal in Sweden.
Yeah.
And especially with lingonberry jam, which I couldn't find the other night.
IKEA. You need to go to IKEA.
Annie and I, when we both had very young babies, they were like, our babies were born within 8 hours of each other by some freak of nature. And we used to meet in IKEA in Croydon to weep at the traumas of having young babies.
Right.
Buy dime bars and eat meatballs. That's all we did. We'd cry, eat meatballs, buy dime bars, go home.
There
every
you go.
Single month.
There you go. Well, so that was, I think it was my comfort food last night. I just had, it was mashed sweet potato, meatballs, and then I had some leftover coleslaw from lunch. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to chuck some of that in as well. I'll tell you why I put the coleslaw on the plate, because it looked so depressing. It's just brown meatballs and orange mashed sweet potato. I was like, oh my God, I look like I live in Soviet Russia. I'm going to put some coleslaw on there.
I thought you were going to say it was an attempt at your five a day. Like my kids look at me really hopefully and I'm like, guys, how many fruit and veggies do you have today after school? And they'll be like, none. And then we'll get home and I'll like, well, we need something healthy. And they'll look at me and be like, jam? Like, no, jam is not the answer.
Well, do you know what? That Elbow song I was telling you about, so the What Am I Without You, there's a line in the second verse. It's, what am I on the earth for if not to put you to bed, if not to remind you to eat sometimes, if not to cradle your head. What am I without you? So I was singing that to my daughter and she went, you don't need to remind me to eat sometimes, Daddy, but you need to remind me to eat some fruit. So whenever I sing that song, I sing, what am I, you know, if not to remind you to eat some fruit, if.
Well, the last question is usually sing us your lullaby, but I think you've just done it.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I'll sing Njol Njol Girl for you because that.
Oh, yes.
Come on. I like the sound of this.
What I love about Njol Njol. So Njol Njol is the kind of area, I think, or the tribe that the girl is from. There's Aboriginal words throughout it. Birad Scrub is also just some bushland. But there's a line, your gumby nose, which means your snotty nose. But the there's a line in I love you until there's Arajin Jarajin Hills, which means there's no more Jarajin Hills, because that's the name of the mountain range that way. So it's a guy that lives on the coast. I love you until there's no more Jarajin Hills and there's Arajin Angurubin Gurulil, which means there's no more little green frogs. So it's, I love you so far that way that there's no more hills, and I love you so far that way that there's no more little green frogs. So that's the one that I sing. Okay, so it goes.
I'm settling down.
Wow, okay. I've got to do it justice now, because also I'm not a great singer, so my daughter doesn't.
I'm sure you are.
My daughter doesn't mind when my voice cracks, but so it's.
You haven't heard us. We don't mind at all. Yeah, it's
you're all right.
Okay, so it's. Nyung Nyung girl, you're the one I love. You're from Birad Scrub, and you're the only one I love. Nyung Nyung girl, walking late at night, teeth shining white. There ain't nothing else inside. 'Cause I love you, yeah, I love you until. There's Arajin Jarajin Hills, Arajin Angurubin Gurulil. Nyung Nyung girl, I love you from your toes to your gumby nose. That's just the way it goes. 'Cause I love you, yeah, I love you until. There's Arajin Jarajin Hills, Arajin Angurubin Gurulil. So that's what I sing to my 8-year-old every night.
Oh, I love that.
That is super lovely. Thank you so much, Adam Hills. You've been a lovely, lovely guest, and I wish that you're back with your girls soon. When are you going back to Australia?
I've got 9 weeks here this time, and then I'm home for 3 months.
Amazing.
Oh, that's nice. Me know when we're going to see the Queen, okay?
Yeah, we'll go. And Wendy, should we go shopping for hats later, yeah?
Yeah, good plan.
Absolutely. Brilliant. And do you know what? Just to be safe, practice your Australian accent.
Okay, we will.
Right.
Thank you, Adam.
Have a good weekend.
Oh, thank you.
Bye, Adam.
I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Thank you.